You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and this week we're going to continue to kind of look at what happened in the legislatures in the two states adjoining the Quad City area here. And today, I'm very pleased to have on as our guest from the Illinois side of the river, State Senator Mike Halpin, who is going to talk a little bit about what happened in Springfield. Senator, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Robin. I always appreciate the chance to chat.
It was an interesting session. Especially at the end. I don't want to give it away. I wanted to have you tell the story, but it kind of got exciting at the end a little bit. And for our listeners, Democrats control everything, but that doesn't guarantee that everything goes smoothly at times.
Yeah. So we in Illinois, our General Assembly session traditionally lasts from the middle of January through the end of the month of May. And this year we had a little bit of aspiration to not wait till the 31st of May, which some legislatures have done in the past. And so we set an ambitious deadline a couple weeks before that, just before Memorial Day. And we actually came fairly close to meeting that deadline. But anytime there's a deadline in Springfield, it's a time when, you know, things come up. There are a lot of moving pieces. Individual legislators have different preferences of what they'd like to see in the legislation. But at the end of the day, we put together something that I think everybody that supported it could live with, and that will hopefully, in my opinion, will provide for some great benefits for the state of Illinois for the next fiscal year.
I had Patrick Finkston from the Illinois Political Newsletter on last week. His independent analysis was that downstate came out pretty good this session in a couple of areas. Can you talk about your highlights for the state as a whole and also for our region in western Illinois?
Of course. You know, the two biggest things I think will be helpful to our region is our continued funding of the K-12 evidence-based formula. You know, essentially that gives the districts with lower property equalized assessed value a little bit of a boost when you put that against what their needs are. And when we first passed this back in 2027, a lot of our local schools were funded at the 50% level. And now if you look this year after 6 years, or I guess, yeah, we haven't got next year's funding yet. So after 6 years of funding this formula, all of those schools have moved up and are at least 60% funded, and some are 70s and 80s, and some are in the 90% range. So that's been an incredible benefit to students here in the K-12 system in our region. And that's going to continue because we continue to fully fund that program. The second big thing is the child tax credit that we passed here in Illinois. It's not as big as I wanted it to be and as big as I originally signed up to sponsor, but it is going to do more to help families with kids here in Illinois. You know, we've had the federal child tax credit was hugely successful during COVID and the immediate aftermath, but with the federal government not stepping up to renew that and not being able to agree with the squabbling out there, we are trying to do our part to fill that gap. The federal child tax credit lifted so many thousands, tens of thousands of kids out of poverty in the country, and we want to try to keep that going here in Illinois. And it's a couple hundred bucks for some people that may not seem like much, but for the families that are eligible for this and receiving it, it's a huge boost. It can pay off a car repair or a small medical bill that's been hanging over somebody's head. It could, help support, a week of daycare, a couple weeks of daycare in some places. So it's going to be a good thing. We're going to be expanding it next fiscal year, doubling the size of the program. And it's my hope that we'll continue to increase that program as time goes on.
What I understand, there were some concerns. The state controller afterwards was voiced some opinions about perhaps some more cuts that needed to be made. Are things tightening up a little bit? Is that a function of the economy, or maybe revenues not coming in? What's your analysis of that?
My analysis is, I think we're getting back to what most people would consider a, you know, quote, normal budget year. You know, when I started in the state house about 7 years ago, there was, we're in the middle of the budget impasse where we didn't have any budget, and we, you know, cuts had to be on the table because our revenues were just completely out of whack between the court ordered spending that we had been going through. Then after that, we had a year or two of trying to play catch up and paying down debts that we accumulated during that budget impasse. And by the time we finally got, you know, what might be a normal budget in fiscal year 19, when Governor Pritzker came in, that was an okay year budget wise. But then COVID happened, and it was both a, you know, a blessing and a curse when it came to finances, because a lot of revenue dropped because people weren't able to necessarily go to work or to go out and spend money in restaurants and hotels and things like that. But on the flip side, there was a lot of federal cash assistance that was coming into the state. And so none of those budgets would I consider, you know, normal. And we're finally getting back to a point where we have a steady stream of regular revenues coming in, and we have we've not done a lot of new one-time spending programs. We've paid down a lot of our debt that had been accumulated for years, repaid all the gimmicky interfund borrowing within the state budget. And now we're at a point where we're just trying to increase programs where we can, and broaden programs where we can, but doing that within the context of how much money we're actually bringing in as a state. And I think it means that there's not a huge room for growth in new programs, but we're not facing drastic cuts. And I think that's probably going to continue for a year or two, at least.
Yeah, if you look back, we have been through some tumultuous times over the last 10 to 15 years in the state, and it does seem like things have calmed down back to a, as you say, normal budget, which I imagine has got to be nice as a legislator to have some, a little bit of predictability.
It's nice. Things. Some of the newer members that weren't there during that time, when you don't have that benchmark to compare it to, this seemed like a bad budget year, right? Because we didn't have all the federal aid to help support some of the things that we wanted to do. But this budget year was much better than the first year that I came in, I can say for sure.
What did you think about the governor's proposal, which ultimately passed? That was to take away the local sales tax on food, which sounds like a great idea. However, a lot of cities have that in place to fund their budgets for public safety, things like that. It kind of puts some competing interests against each other. How did you feel about that and ultimately vote on that?
I was generally supportive of that. You know, it was a tax that the state wasn't receiving, and it's the kind of tax that I think local communities should have the power and control to determine whether they want their citizens to have that. And I think we gave local governments the tools to go that direction if they want to. And they're closest to the people. They'll be able to know what their public wants and whether the money that would bring in is going to be exchanged for services that the citizens are demanding. You know, collecting it on behalf of the state, we had no control over, you know, where that got spent on a local level. And so for us to continue to keep charging that statewide without consideration of local concerns, the time has come for it to go away. I do hope that some towns will pass that savings along, but at the very least, city council should be having a discussion to make sure that any money raised through the grocery tax actually goes back into the communities that are paying it.
How about it's that time of the year where we go through the slowness of highways with all the construction going on, and I've been out and you know, you get kind of impatient, but then you think, hey, this is what we want to get roads improved. Did our part of the state come out okay as far as capital needs and infrastructure spending?
It appears so. The Department of Transportation released their multi-year program. I think it was just last week or earlier this week. And there are a lot of things on the horizon here in the Quad Cities with the I-80 bridge reconstruction coming up. There's parts of Andalusia Road, which I fought for many years to get repaired because of the danger it was starting to pose. Sherrard Road down between Rock Island and towards Mercer County. That's been a long time complaint of local residents. That's on the agenda for this summer. There's no shortage of projects here in the area, and I'm going to make sure to continue to keep pushing for that. And it was one of those things when we talk about what does our motor fuel tax or gas tax pay for, and these are the things that it pays for, and it's the results that we are seeing and that we weren't seeing for many years. And now I'm glad to start to see these projects popping up and getting them finished.
They're all over the place, which is a good thing. It'll just slow us up a little, which is good too.
Better to drive slow temporarily because of construction than to have to constantly drive slow because you're worried about blowing a tire or another damage to your car.
Yeah, potholes, absolutely. I saw something in other states, and I'm curious if it's a topic here in Illinois yet, and that is with the growth of the sales of electric vehicles. That impacts our gas tax. People aren't buying as much gas unless gets put into the roads. Is that an issue yet here in Illinois? I've been in discussions about how would you fill that gap in funding?
So far, it's not. In Illinois, what we've done is there is a marginal increase in the registration cost for an electric vehicle. And as you know, that gets renewed either on annual or biannual basis. And so far, that tends to cover what the cost would be for that electric vehicle using the roads. We don't set it so high that it's a disincentive to buying the electric vehicle, but it's high enough to kind of cover for what a car might pay in gas tax over the course of a year. So far, it's not a problem, but it's definitely something that's on our radar, as I'm sure it is in other states. There have been various proposals out there. One of them is a vehicle miles traveled. Basically, instead of having a gas tax, you'd be taxed based on how many miles you drive in the state. There are pros and cons to that. It requires the car owner to give additional information that, you know, in my opinion, the state doesn't necessarily need. Something may become more difficult to track. But that's a conversation that probably should continue over the next several years and try to get a consensus on. There are other options out there to do it as well.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio here in the Quad Cities. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is State Senator Mike Halpin, right here from the Illinois part of the Quad Cities, former state rep. He's also the Rock Island County Democratic Party chair. We're talking a little bit about what happened in the recently concluded Illinois legislative session, the budget, infrastructure, K-12 spending. I want to bring up a topic near and dear to your heart, obviously, and that's and mine too, as somebody who teaches part-time at a local college. As chair of the higher ed committee, that's a very important position, not only for higher education, but that plays right into our economy here in Illinois. What's going on as far as funding and then longer term, looking at funding down the road? And I know you've been involved in this and taking trips around the district, meeting with our many great institutions of higher learning.
Yeah, so I'm fortunate. The 36th district in the Senate, which I represent, other than I think Quincy University, has every institution of higher education in Western Illinois right here. And so it is near and dear to my heart. And we're in a place where we've really begun to start reinvesting in higher education, reversing a trend that we've seen for many years. I was a little disappointed in this year's budget. Our universities, public universities, only got a 2% overall operations increase, which barely keeps up with inflation and in some cases doesn't. But we were also able to start funding again the Illinois Veterans Grant and the National Guard Grant to reimburse our universities for the good work that they do educating our veterans. And that amounts to another, you know, half to 1% increase, depending on how often or how much a university caters to those veteran students. So that was a good thing. But we put additional money into MAP grants this year. It's the highest I think we've ever had. It's able to allow all eligible recipients basically free community college, and about 40% of students are able to go to a public four-year university for free under that program. There's still more work to do. And you mentioned funding for higher education. I had mentioned it's a 2% across the board for all universities. We're actually working on a project as a result of Higher Education Funding Commission recommendations to try to more equitably distribute those funds, similar to what we did with K through 12 education and the evidence-based formula. And so over the next several months in the summer, and probably into next legislative session, we're going to be trying to determine how we can put that program into place and really give a boost to those universities that most need the additional funds. You know, Western Illinois University here in the area has been a great, you know, great partner, has been trying to educate our students, but they were hit hard by the budget impasse, you know, by COVID, and it's time to really start reinvesting in them as well as our other public universities.
When you get out around, and I know you'll be doing that soon, and you do it pretty consistently throughout the year, I know, visiting with leaders of higher education institutions in the district, what do you hear? What are their big concerns moving forward? I know enrollment is always a concern, costs, but are there other issues that you're hearing about that perhaps need to be addressed at the state level?
Enrollment's always big. Where there's a shrinking pool of high school students in general out there. We have fewer high school students graduating or even being in the schools. Costs are a factor, and that's combined with the drop in enrollment. But the biggest issue beyond that, I think, is mental health issues and challenges on campus. Whether it's a community college, private college, or a four-year public university, across the board, mental health challenges and stress issues, substance abuse, because of the new experience a lot of these folks are going through, it's incredibly difficult to address. And we were able to try to maintain as much funding as we could for mental health services on campus. Originally, it was proposed as a cut. We were able to restore those to try to, you know, keep the universities doing at least what they're already doing. But what they tell me is they would need a lot more to make sure and fully serve their entire student body. It's only tougher here in the rural areas in Western Illinois. The lack of providers is a significant barrier. We've made some inroads with telehealth, which can fill some gaps, but there really isn't anything quite like having, you know, a licensed therapist or psychologist or psychiatrist in person talking you through your needs. And so if there's any one big push, I think that's what the universities would raise across the board.
That very topic, I saw where you were able to get some more funding for mental health for various clinics around the district as well. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, so as a partnership between the federal government and the state, Illinois is receiving federal money to for basically a pilot program or a statewide pilot program to increase reimbursements for mental health services or behavioral health services in the state. And two of our Robert Young centers in Rock Island and Moline, as well as Bridgeway in Galesburg, are going to be recipients and participating in this program. Now, there are only 19 behavioral health centers throughout the state that were selected, and our area was able to get three locations, which is, I think, says something both for the need for those services in the area, but also for our ability to provide some good data and manage this money in a way that we can demonstrate will be effective and hopefully increase future federal investment in these programs.
You mentioned veterans earlier, and every time you mention that, I can't help think of your former boss, Lane Evans, and the impact I'm sure he had on you. I know it, you've been on my show before, and you've talked about the work you did for Lane. I call him Lane. I should call him Congressman Evans, but he always wanted to go by Lane. On manufacturing issues and Maytag, and I know your hard work there is a function of your work for Lane, but talk a little bit more about the work you've done on behalf of veterans here in the district. You mentioned at least one or two examples, but if you could talk about those and more, and how I guess your general approach to this issue that you see that state government can play a more important role.
Yeah, you know, our state role is much less, unfortunately, it's much less impactful than the federal government. Most of your health care, most of your other GI benefits are through the federal government. But there are areas where we've tried to be effective when it comes to veterans' preference for hiring within the state. The Illinois Veterans Grant, a National Guard grant that we're now has always been a requirement for universities, but now we're actually putting the money in to make sure that universities are getting paid for those services. Those are two big areas where we have a significant impact. We also do a little bit in the healthcare space when it comes to our Illinois veterans homes. We now have five throughout the state, and I think we would love to have more and be able to have a bigger capacity. But we've done a pretty good job in the last few years of trying to make those places the best they can be for veterans. Back in, I think it was 2014, back before I was elected, we had a Legionnaires outbreak in the Quincy Veterans Home. Since that time, we've completely revamped the water and HVAC systems, rebuilt some of the residential areas, and we're on a much better track when it comes to these homes, and I hope we'll continue to do that. Some of the other areas that we're interested in is making sure that our disabled veterans continue to maintain their property tax exemptions. We are trying to find a way, since it's a statewide commitment, there are certain areas of the state, such as East St. Louis, right here in Rock Island County, up in Lake County, Illinois, near Great Lakes, where if you're near a military base, a higher share of veterans own property and pay for property in that area. And so when we offer that benefit that we should, it sometimes can reduce taxes and put a higher burden on other residents in an area. We're looking at ways to try to equalize that throughout the state. Since we're saying it's a state priority, maybe some of these communities that have a higher density of veterans should get a rebate or of some kind from the state to make up for the fact that we're having those discounted property taxes. That's an ongoing conversation, and hopefully we'll be able to get some resolution on that soon.
The last time we were on last year, I think it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, if it was last year or the year before, where the Safety Act had just been implemented. And I remember getting a lot of press releases warning that this was going to have a detrimental impact on the state from a public safety perspective. You know what? I just thought about this talking to you, and I haven't heard anything about it. I'm not taking sides here, but because I remember your explanation of it was kind of like, all right, everybody calm down. Here's what it's going to do. And I guess I think I can say this pretty accurately. You were right.
I think so, and I can be biased if I may. We're almost a year now into full implementation. It was last September when the courts fully implemented after the lawsuit found that it was constitutional. And what we've seen is that dangerous people are continuing to be locked up when they commit violent offenses. And when the state's attorney does their job and asks for them to be detained, and when the judges do their job and make a decision as to whether somebody is dangerous. It has been working. We haven't seen the purge, as some of my colleagues and other folks have mentioned. What we've seen is that judges and state's attorneys and the police departments themselves are making sound decisions, really prioritizing those folks that are dangerous and keeping them locked up, rather than just making their access to money the factor as to whether or not they're out and about among us. So I'm confident that that's going to continue. I will say, you know, no system is perfect. And, you know, it's possible that there's going to be someone where the judge makes a close call and releases them. And they commit another crime. But that happens right now, or it happened before this law went into effect, when people were out on bail. And we need to be realistic about what this bill does and doesn't do. So I'm optimistic that it's going to make sure that dangerous people are continue to be locked up.
We have a couple minutes left. I just want to open it up. Was there anything else that the legislature did that you're particularly proud of, or that listeners should know about in 60 to 120 seconds here?
You know, I think this year was a year where we're focusing on the budget. We did pass a statewide literacy plan and funded it for our young kids. That's important. We passed legislation on, you know, libraries legislation, make sure libraries continue to be funded. Those are all things important. Actually, I'm about to distribute my summer reading program to libraries across the region. So if any of your listeners have kids that want to read 8 books over the summer, and fill out the form and let me know, the kids are eligible for a gift card. I think you can find the form on my website. So head over there. But we really focused on the budget and making sure we have good continuity over the next year. I think once we had the spring session after the elections are over, or evaluate where to go next. But I think there's a little bit of a lighter load this year.
State Senator Mike Halpin from the Quad Cities, Illinois side of the Quad Cities, has been our guest today on Heartland Politics. Senator, thanks. It's always a pleasure having you on, and we'll look forward to maybe talk a little more politics sometimes. I'm kind of glad, to be honest, that we avoided that today.
Anytime. I'm happy to do it. We'll make it happen maybe before the election sometime.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.